Hey everybody, what's going on? This is Frankie B, the co-creator of Kaijus and Cowboys. And I just want to say, hey man, thank you so much for listening to this. And as always, keep that art flowing.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of Genuine Chit Chat. This week, my guest is Frankie B. Washington. He has been an artist in various art industries. He's done storyboards for movies. He's worked on a Universal Marvel ride. He has worked on trading cards for Marvel. He's also done comic books and loads of other things. He's been working for, I think, over 30 years in the illustrative industry. So he has a lot of knowledge to pass on. In addition to talking about his time in the various different industries, he also talks about how you can make artwork into kind of a business, how you make money from it, how much discipline you need, his time in art school and other jobs, what he learned from his mentors. So it's loads of great advice, but also he talks about his nerdy loves. And one of the big things we talk about is Kaijus and Cowboys, which is the current indie comic that he's releasing with Matthew Blair. They've done 3 issues so far that have all had previous Kickstarters. There's also an issue 0 as well. And so they are gunning for the 4th issue to also complete his Kickstarter, which is starting on Monday the 15th of April. I believe it'll be running for a month, so a link to that is in the description, and obviously we're about a week or so before that, so make sure you sign up so you get notified when it goes on sale. Listen to Frankie talk about it. His passion is infectious, and I really want him to succeed with another Kickstarter of Kaijus and Cowboys. But friends, let's get this chat going. So check out information in the description, including everything that Frankie spoke about in this conversation, social media and all that sort of jazz. I'll be back at the end to give you more information on what's to come, and make sure you subscribe because I talk to a lot of comic book authors. I also talk to artists and other people who like nerdy stuff. So if you're into comics or artwork or anything like that, please subscribe, check out the back catalogue, and also go to youtube.com/genuinechitchat and you'll be able to watch the video version of this conversation as well. But friends, that's enough from me. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Frankie, and I'll be back at the end. Welcome to Genuine Chit Chat, where we have honest conversations with interesting people. And I'm your host, Mike Burton. Right then, my friends, I am here today with an incredible individual. To list all of the works he's been involved with would be far too much, so I'm going to use a quote of his own, which is an eclectic artist. Yes. So this is Frankie B. Washington, who is promoting the Kaijus and Cowboys a series at the moment. Issue 4 is going up to Kickstarter. When this episode drops, it'll be within a few days, so I'll put a link in the description as well. I have read issues 0, 1, 2, and 3, and they're all fantastic, so we'll delve into those in a minute. But Frankie, I mean, you've got very business orientated. We were speaking a little bit before recording. So I thought, as we were just talking about that, why not we kick that straight off and go the business of comic books, because you've worked behind the scenes in so many different areas. You've done storyboards, you've created trading cards, you've done paintings, illustrations. You've basically done relatively everything you can do in the artistic industry. Yes. So I wonder if you could tell our listeners just a bit of advice on what you've kind of learned from it and some of the maybe pitfalls of anyone starting to go in the industry. Not asking you to give a Bible on it, but you know, the sheer amount that you've worked in.
Gotta wrap it up. No. I think one of the things that I learned was patience. Mm. I got into it, like when I graduated from art school back in 1991, it was 2 years before I ever got into actually getting an actual gig in art. So it was like then 1993, that's when I got my first official freelance gig working for a small movie. Production studio, and it was in I'm in Boston, so it was in Waltham at the time, and that was my chance. And so I was still young, and I had that impatient kind of nature, and so I had to learn over time that I had a lot of mentors. That was another good thing, was that I had a lot of people who kind of were like, you know, they would say stuff and they would sort of mentor me a little bit, and I would listen, even though I would sometimes be all over the place, scattered and whatever. I'd always just listen, and I got used to sort of taking what I really needed that could work for me and then getting rid of the unnecessary stuff. So a lot of stuff that they would say is slow down, be patient, listen, learn, watch. These are the key things that you need to do. Like if you want to do comic books and you have a passion, I had a passion for comic books, but unfortunately, as when I went through my school focused more on commercial illustration. They were just like, my teachers were like, you're going to work in the art industry. They felt that like things like comic books were just a niche. They were just like, okay, it exists, but it's not the whole art industry. The art industry is a massive ocean. Comic books is like a stream or a river. And so you can navigate your artistic boat down that stream one day. But I'm telling you right now, if you want to make a living and you want to be able to survive as an artist, then you need to look at the industry as a whole. And that's what I did. And then I end up doing some film storyboards and layouts, all the boring stuff that people can think about, but I was paid very well for it. And that taught me, it helped structure me. It helped me understand things like production schedules. That's another big thing where I see a lot of people rushing. They rush too much. They don't take the time. You got to develop your character. Sit down, look at your character. Get turnarounds, get drawings, get adequate illustrations for it. You know, don't just immediately think you're going to get a campaign, you know, and then all of a sudden it's going to fly off, you know, whatever, you know. Advertising taught me, when I got into advertising, was that promotional and marketing are everything. And I have to stress that it is very powerful. Take a moment and just look at the amount of advertising commercials on streaming and on TV. You know, if you don't believe my words, look, just take a moment, because that's what happened. It was like one of those moments when I got into advertising, because I never thought of it either until I started working and started making a sausage and was like, oh, wow, this is pretty powerful. The ability to be able to sell what you're making, this product, and to somehow get people to buy that product is incredible. And it is something that us individuals who are doing our own creator own comic books, we need to have that. And it's something that you have to sort of, since you're starting, because you don't have the money, clearly you're not going to be wealthy, you're not going to be able to buy an ad agency or have them, because that would be wonderful. If that was the case, I would have done it. If I had a ton of money, I'd be like, I want these buddies, my advertising, you guys handled all that, and then I'll just sit back and just be like, all right, you know, radio, TV, streaming, it'd be all set. But clearly, I don't have that kind of bread. Many people that are doing indie stuff, they don't have that kind of bread. So the thing is that you now have to learn how to do this. That means that you have to go out there. You have to find your audience. First off, if you're doing a comic book, you got to understand, who are you trying to sell that comic book to? What group? I knew already, me and Matthew, and that's another thing too. I'm working with a partner. I think one of the things about it was that I knew for myself that I wanted to share, because I've done it before in the past, but I know I wanted to share some of that workload, because it can be a daunting thing. If you're just by yourself. The
synergy of it all as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, working in advertising, I was used to working with teams, you know? And so there was all this interesting energy from the creative director, the art director, everybody's coming with their different kind of things. And I love that kind of atmosphere, because I felt like that's it taught me a lot. And then I was able to sort of, it motivated me to really up my game with my artistic skills and even just the way my thinking was. So, but yeah, for me, when me and Matthew, because we had already been working together on a webcomic series called The Secret Lives of Villains, and we worked on it for a couple of years. So I've known him now going on 7 years. So we've built this kind of relationship now going into what the comic book and stuff. And we've had our talks and stuff like that. And the thing about it was, I love the fact of being able to share the load, you know, because it is stressful. I mean, the thing about it is that because I'm also a freelance artist, you know, just because I'm doing a comic book doesn't mean I don't take on clients. I still have, you know,
commissions as well. Amazing.
I do commissions. I have clients that contact. I think a lot of people don't understand that sometimes, and I'm still posting stuff online. So I'll still have clients, you know, from my old days, they'll contact me. Hey, Frank, do some board, working on boards. Put that aside. You know, then I got to do this. I'm doing multiple different things while I'm still getting this comic book out, while I'm still putting a video online. That means that I've learned how to master my time. When I was going through the process of being a freelance artist, I was like, how can I make myself more efficient? That was one of the big things. I was like, how do I cut out the unnecessary stuff and then maintain what can make this a much more efficient machine so that I can get the work done and I can get more clients? And it's just stuck with me. And I always tell people who contact me, I say, learn to become more efficient. Find that way that works for you, so that if you are working a 9-to-5, then this is when you can work on this. But you have to find a way that's going to work for you, so that you're not having a breakdown moment, because you don't want to be having that. Then this might not be the right thing for you. You know, you're trying to create a new IP. It takes a lot, you know, and that's something that I always try to tell people. I always try to, hopefully they'll get it. You know, I know that feeling of enthusiasm when you see somebody put something out like us. We're already in our fourth year. This is our fourth year of crowdfunding. You know, we already have put out, you know, I got roughly 5 books here. that we've put out, and we're still trudging along, you know, and we're always, and, but the thing about it is that me and Matthew had a talk, and we sit down and we have our talks and our meetings and stuff like that. And we communicate and we say, look, this is our production schedule. This is what we can get out to people. And then we stay consistent. So communication, consistency, that's the other part of it. Make sure you're communicating with your team. Make sure you're communicating with your readers. I'm trying to build that connection with your readers, but then also making sure that you're consistent. I mean, the thing is that if you say you're going to do something, then hell and high water, you need to follow through with it. That's something I learned a long time ago from many of my mentors. They were like, yeah, there's times where you may do a gig and you're just like, oh, why did I take this? Well, you know what? You took the job. You took the money. Money may not be that great, but you have your word. Your equity is you, your word, your reputation. And the thing is that you still should be giving 200% to that gig, because regardless of what, when you do that 200%, first off, you'll have something great for a portfolio. Now that client, regardless of what, is going to be like, they did an amazing job. They can't say anything bad. They just be like, oh, well, you know, yeah, you know, but they did a great job. And that's what my mentors would always tell me. He said, regardless of what, you want to always be on that high note. And that's what we strive for. Yeah, that's what I strive for. And that's what we strive for. Yeah.
It's the right mentality. I mean, even myself, you know, I'm not a creative in the sense that I create, you know, art or anything like that. And your artwork is amazing. And we'll get into that in a moment. But, you know, with myself, I've been doing this podcast now for 7 years. I've got a nice, you know, listener base. But one of the things is I release an episode every week. I take a small amount of time off in the holidays. But even if I go away or anything like that, I'll release like a little bonus episode or just something to fill that gap.
Exactly.
And I've always been that kind of thing that I'll release an episode every week and I'll do my absolute best and things. And it's just people appreciate that, because especially when you are something regular or something that's more independent and isn't one of the, you know, the big people in podcasting or comics or anything, you do have to find your ways to keep people. And obviously the story or the content itself is a factor. But if you keep telling someone, oh yeah, content's coming, and it's like over time people will lose interest. And I want to ask, with because you've got a great discipline, you not only have the passion, which I love and is very infectious, but you've got great discipline. And I note that when you sort of graduated art school and things like that, or around that time, you worked at like a security company for a while, and you had this path in front of you of kind of leaning more on the art or going down the security element. Do you think that the combination of working in art school and the things the teachers were telling you in the sort of commercial side, mixing with what you learned in security, do you think that helped your kind of discipline and things? I know you've been drawing for a long time, but I don't know if your discipline came from when you were a lot younger, because I've heard the stories of your mum and things and your drawing. So I wonder if you could tell
us
about
younger.
You and stuff with discipline. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, much younger. My mother started me off in a sense of discipline. I went to, I was raised on Baptist. As in religion, but my mother put me in parochial school, which was Catholic, Christian. And so that's where, and that was an early age. I was in there for a little bit doing that and stuff. So there was a little bit of discipline growing there, because she was like, you got to get up. You had to pressure clothes. I had to take care of my mom. We were latchkey kids. So my mom, I had to take care of my sister and stuff. So I was given these responsibilities as a very young kid. And then as I got older, I remember my first job, I started at 12.
Wow.
I was 40. Yeah, my mom took me. She said, hey, you like comic books, right? And I said, yay. I was like, yeah, because she would give us allowances for stuff, for chores. But then I remember that day where she just took my hand. She said, yo, you like comic books? I said, yeah, I love comics. She said, okay, come on. And I'm walking with them all bounding around all happy and stuff. And she said, come on, took me to this local store. And she said, well, she said, I just found a person here who's going to be folding newspapers on Sunday. Here he is. And there you go. And that was my first job. And I was folding newspapers on Sunday for this guy. So, and then I got bit by the bug of making my own money. So then I was like, wow, how can I make more money? So then when it was snow, I would go around with a shovel and hello, sir, ma'am, shovel. I'm a straight up hustler. I hustle hard.
You've got the hunger. Know? You've got the thirst.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just like, you know, and I think there's other hustlers out there, but in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to hustle harder than you. I used to say that my spirit animal was a tortoise, and the hare. So the hare's doing, he's all speeding around and stuff. And I always use that analogy. I see all these hares running around and stuff. While I'm just lumbering slowly around, making my way, I'll get there eventually. And I did. And I always stuck. I always stayed on the path. Like, I took pride in working. I took pride in the stuff that I did, so that when I reached that point of security, I was really good. Like, they were like, well, Washington, we really like, we think that you can go to the next level, which probably would have been armed security. Where would it, you know, we've been careered, and that's when you're really hardcore career. But then I had a sergeant who was just like, yeah, but you went to art school. It was one of those kind of conversations. He was just like, well, why'd you go to art school? You know, you didn't just go there just to throw money at the thing or whatever. And it was true. He's like, you know, when you do your rounds and stuff, you come back and you start drawing and stuff. He's like, that's what you're passionate about. You should go with your passion. You never want to be one of those people where, you know, you're 70, if you knock on wood, make it 60, 70 years old and just have regrets. And that always scared me because I've been growing up seeing people like that, people in my own family who had regrets about the things they couldn't achieve. Just because of whatever situation. And I just said, I don't want to have regrets like that. There's a lot of people that believed in me enough to help me when I went to art school and put me in programs and stuff. And then I said, well, I can't let them down, but I can't let myself down. So I think that's why I'm very hardcore when it comes to artwork. You know, I think that it's something where I had to fight my own inner demons where I was kind of like, did I make the right choice? When I got doing art, I didn't know if I was going to be, you know, be able to make money out doing it, but I kept fighting. I'm a very stubborn individual. People get surprised. They go, "Wow, you get angry." I say, "Yeah, that's why I had to go to therapy. I needed help.
Is acceptable." Yeah, saying that is very honest of you. Brilliant.
Yeah, I said I had to go to therapy because my childhood was, you know, there was some happy moments, but there was some sad moments too. And I knew that I needed help and I needed therapy to sort of help me. And I learned tools in which I could take whatever rage and anger I have in me and use it productive. So take that anger. So I say my artwork is therapy. I was talking to my to a friend of mine I was talking to someone during one of these interviews and I said, yeah, I mean, if you look at Kaijus and Cowboys, I mean, the irony is that I like drawing Kaijus and I like drawing giant robots. Right there, I'm literally showing you the inside of my psyche. My anger could reach Kaiju level. But then the giant robot's there to fight against that anger. And the giant robot represents the linear kind of control. So that if you're going to go through a psych thing, that's what it is. It's like you look at it. I've always loved drawing giant monsters. And I think that it was a reflection of my own anger.
That's a very interesting point, because I was going to ask a little bit about that, because I've noticed that, you know, you've done a lot of work in your time, but, you know, a common theme is something that you generally, I'd say, maybe lean towards is kaijus and robots and things. And, you know, your artwork is very big and bombastic in all the best ways. And it's like, it must be quite therapeutic. Like, if you can't literally break down a building, then, you know, what's cooler than a giant robot doing it? Exactly.
Well, it's like, if you look at a lot of artists, I think a lot of artists and writers, if you really look at their work, they're telling you who they are in their work, man. I mean, my mother always said, she said, people will eventually show you who they are through their actions. That's why I've always been a person where words don't really hold too much. A person can say anything they want to say. Just watch them. Just take a moment, sit back, get so comfortable, and you watch somebody, and you'll see everything about them. Because they can't hide it. Because they'll be so used to doing whatever. So they're going to reveal who they are. So I think that as an artist, Jack Kirby, look at Jack Kirby's stuff. You look at his Kirby stuff, you go, yeah, this dude was a soldier. He went through the war. You look at how his characters fought. You really started breaking apart. You go, wow, this, yeah. But also he had this strong sense of fighting against evil kind of thing. And you can see that in a lot of his works, the power of it and stuff like that. There you go. You know, Stan Lee, the way his characters would talk and the vocal, the kind of whatever. I think there's things in it. If you wanted to, if somebody was really going to break it apart, you probably see a lot of stuff in all artists out there, all writers, musicians, any creative person out there. They are telling you who they are through their pieces of work. And so for me, yes, I love kaijus. I love giant robots and I love werewolves. I'm a huge Wolfman fan.
Amazing. Yes. There's not enough. I will say there is not enough like decent werewolf content. For every 50 vampire films, we get like one werewolf film every like decade, and then every now and then they suck, and you're like, come on, this is one of the coolest ideas ever.
Werewolves are incredible. I love. I'm like, I'm the werewolf with the dreads. The turtles, like a werewolf with
cool.
I drew an image of that too. I think but I made him more into like a hyena kind of man from like a sort of African Afrocentric kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, that looks kind of cool. So you never know. That may be down the line.
Well, that would be very cool. And also it would channel in the kind of the anger almost in a way, because, you know, yes. I think Hulk is basically, you know, essentially a werewolf in a respect, but yep. it's instead of yep. the moon, it's the anger. And yep. I think that the whole werewolf thing is that kind of, you know, when a human becomes something that's almost beyond them and is just yep. fueled by instinct. But again, that links in with the kaijus, isn't it? Because the, yep. as you said, with the robots and the kaijus, the kaiju is just raw instinct and emotion yep. and anger, whereas the robot is, you know, rational and controlled. Yes. In air quotes, you know, so there's also that balance, isn't there? And I think a lot of yes. your work really speaks to, maybe as you've gotten older, the kind of equilibrium, you know, you've, yes. you've been having therapy, you know, and as well as your artwork and things, you've got the robots and the kaijus, you've got a lot of this kind of balance going on yes. in a lot of your work.
Yes, I mean, I think one of the things about it is, well, we'll say like the character Hunter Bot Bwin. One of the things about him when I first came up with the design was that immediately, I saw an image of Clint Eastwood, of course.
Mm,
yep. He represents the trope of the spaghetti western cowboy and stuff like that. But then I knew that I wanted Jet Jaguar.
Mm.
I love Jet Jaguar from Godzilla. I've always loved his face and stuff. And then I said, okay, what's the third component? And the third component was Jack Kirby's Machine Man.
Very nice, yep.
And I've always and I always stressed, I said, they go, well, Machine Man. I said, no, Jack Kirby's Machine Man. Not when they kicked him off or when he got off and then all of a sudden it became, now I stopped at that point. But Jack Kirby's Machine Man, I just loved how his approach to the character was, how the character was very capable, but also searching for his own identity. And so when me and Matthew were talking about doing Hunter Bot Bwin and just this whole world and stuff, I sort of saw Hunter Bot Bwin like that. I immediately was like, boom, this is it. I remember the first round I did, that was the one. Like the image that you see today, that was it. Matthew was like, yeah. Then I tried to do another one because my mind's always like, ah, you know, because I've, you know, you work in a business. I'm always expecting edits. I always tell people when I'm working with them, clients, I go, I'm always shopping the clients like, this is it. I'm bracing myself for the long hours of just redo. So he was like, no, I like it. And then I actually did another version and he said, nah, that won't it. And I was like, oh, dude. But I said, I'm gonna find a way to reuse that image. That's another thing. I hate wasting images too. I hate wasting stuff. I always feel like everything could serve a purpose. You just got to give it some time.
Yeah, even if it's not the same project, is it? It's like if you come yes. up with this, it can either be later on in the same project, it could exactly. be a spin-off, or it could be exactly. completely separate. You could go, you know, I really like this element of this character here,
yep.
but it won't all fit into this project. But actually, exactly. this part of it would, you know, it's just never, it's the cutting room floor, isn't it? Anything you kind of leave, don't let it waste. It's recyclable. You yeah. want to keep it going.
There's a lot of great, there's a lot of great concepts out there and a lot of great characters and stuff. And people just, almost like you just want to just throw it away. Like, why would you throw that away? It's work with that. I mean, I had teachers who would always be like, don't just throw your drawing away. When you first get that initial feeling, he said, work with it. Mm-hmm. Work with it until you can't. Then you'll know. Then you'll be like, okay, I did everything I could, but this is just isn't working. But that means you have to put the time in there to see. You might surprise yourself. And I've learned that over the years. Like, I keep working with something or whatever, and I go, this got much better. It got better because I hung in there. That in itself says a lot about you, the person, that you don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up when, you know, if your first campaign didn't go as well as you thought it would be. Take what you learned from it and say, how can I, you know, tweak it up, you know? Don't just think it as a complete loss. Don't think that you're a complete failure, because you're not a complete failure. Look, we all have to hit our bumps. You know, my thing is that some of us fight hard. When I do this campaign, oh my God, I'm like, I'm like out there. I'm like, man, we gotta get this going. I'm trying to engage people. Anytime somebody comments on something, I'm like, I'm gonna talk to you. I respond back. I always try to respond back to people. There's no reason for me not to. You know, hey, how you doing? What are you thinking? What's going on? You know, please tell me, because I want to learn. I want to find out who we call. We started calling people the people that read our book. We call them writers. You know, that was something where I thought it, going back to my old mindset of advertising, where it's like, I want you to understand you're riding along with us on this journey. We have set out a 12 issue journey. That's what Matthew said. He wanted to write a 12 issue story, Kaijus and Cowboys. And I said, okay, you want to do it? Let's do this. And I said, I started thinking, and I said, I want people who are reading this to ride along with us. Saddle up. Every trope, cowboy trope you can think of, because that's what it was. I love the sense of the old Western tropes of just journey, mm-hmm. of the the unknown territory out there. And you're with there, and all of a sudden you look over and there's somebody else riding, and you're going, okay, I don't know, is this friend or foe or whatever, but maybe we take a chance. And all of a sudden the person runs up, hey, how you doing? All right, let's ride. And you start riding. That's how I envision this stuff. Every time somebody picks up a book or says, okay, I'm going to, you know, get one through the campaign or whatever, you know, you're just another writer, somebody else is coming along for this journey.
It's an amazing way to look at it. And one thing I'll say, we'll delve into Kaiju the Cowboys because I do want to talk about it. And I really enjoyed it. But I know you're a fan of a lot of elements of Japanese culture and things and anime. Mm-hmm. What the vibe I got from Bot with No Name is the first thing I thought of was Vampire Hunter D. I mean, the hat helps, you know, but also, but I know there's like hundreds of other characters like that.
I know, yeah.
But the kind of the badass who hasn't got a lot to say, obviously, Bottle of No Name has nothing to say. But like someone who goes, and I've only seen the Vampire Hunter D, the movie, just the one. I remember he had the weird thing in his hand. And I just think like, he was so cool, and he takes the presence immediately. He comes on, anytime he's in the shot, he's immediate presence. He doesn't have to say anything, but it's all about, you've only really can figure out how he's feeling about stuff with his body language. And I know that's quite a common thing for a lot of the silent types. I know the Westerns historically have got a lot of that. But I wondered, I want to mention that the way that you've drawn Biwin is so well done, because it's so difficult to convey anything without speech in certain ways in comics. And you really have to write, there's angles and things, there's things, what's going on around the character, what's going on in the background and things. So I wonder if you could talk about how has it been to draw a character who you can't lean on the lettering as much. I know the characters like Doc and some of the other supporting cast, Doc especially has enough dialogue for anyone, but like, and in an amazing way, that's not a critique. I love very talkative characters.
I love it.
But like with Biwin, like, have you drawn many characters who are kind of silent antagonists, and how do you go about dealing with that differently to a character that you can rely a little bit more heavily on dialogue?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I am addicted to sequential art.
Ah, yes.
Now, see, and I think that's the thing about it is that, again, a lot of people will say, well, you know, I'm into comics. And I'll tell them, I'll go, okay, that's cool, but I'm into sequential art. That's what made me effective with storyboards, with keyframes, TV boards. I mean, whatever you have it. I love the sense of telling visuals, the visual story just through that. And I'm always trying to test myself and push myself. It helped me a lot when I was doing some work for the animation studio I was freelancing with for a while, actually, was Olive Jar Animation. They don't exist any longer, but they were old school. They did a lot of stuff for MTV and stuff like that. But I remember working with some of the directors there. And I remember a director once telling me how, like, he said, Frank, because my work was stiff. I remember at that time, he was like, Frank, you got to loosen your work up. He said, you know, I want you to try to imagine a camera. And he said, this camera has no limits. It's just constantly moving around. And he said, you use that camera as your viewing point, and then you draw all these different scenes in it. And I said, okay, cool. And then he said another thing, which was very poignant, and it's like a mantra that stays in my head. He said, Frank, I want you to ask yourself a very important question. He said, if you were sitting in a movie theater, and he said, truly be honest with yourself, would you watch what you drew? And that stuck with me. See, again, that's what I mean. Those things where I say mentors, people who just, they can say something. Like, I always felt like I was a gold miner. And you get a nugget. You get a nugget. So you get a lot of dirt.
Get that way.
But boy, you get that nugget and you hold on to that nugget. And I'm like, that's what, there's people that have come in my life and they've said stuff. I've had conversations with many different people. And that nugget will drop out and it just stays in there. And I go, yep, it's mine. And I keep it to this day where I go, would I watch this? And I'm honest, though. You have to be honest. You have to be completely honest. And so when I work on these pages and stuff for Kaijus and Cowboys, I'm thinking of stuff just like you said. I'm a huge fan. I was part of an anime club back in the 80s. Loved it. I grew up watching 80s cartoons. I mean, if saw any of the 80s cartoons and stuff like that, I mean, that's what Kaijus and Cowboys is. It's like you immediately were drawn right into the story. You didn't know anything about any back history. You just knew characters were doing crazy stuff. And then if you hung on long enough with it, then eventually they'll give you snippets of
drip feed almost.
Yeah, exactly. They did not microwave stuff. I know we're in a time where stuff is more microwavable. People were like, microwave. When me and Matthew talked about doing this comic book, I was very adamant. I said, Matthew, look, I am a fan of the Bronze Age form of comic books. You know, I said, I grew up on that stuff, The Shogun Warriors by Marvel and Godzilla. I knew Herb Trimpe, you know, knew him off and on, like when we go to cons and stuff and whatever and talk to him. And I said, I want to do an homage to that. I want to stay true to what I'm good at. I'm not going to try to make stuff all realistic and all that. No, that's just not me. I said, my thing is, I feel like I don't see a lot of people, and maybe there are out there. I don't want to, you know, I'm not dissing anyone out there, but I don't see a lot of people that's really trying to harken back to what I grew up on. You know, that 80s flair, that sense of Bronze Age books where you just, the escapism, just sheer escapism. This means that you just pick a book up, you're not over hyper analyzing it. You don't have to understand why the kaiju weighs, how much it does. Is it able to create a nuclear blast that can blow, you know, all this crazy stuff where you got to go to college for. It's just open a book, you sit back, and you just enjoy it for what it is. And that's what I wanted to do. And so I think that's what kind of spurred me. I love drawing those little minute things and nuances. Those are the things that I love. I love the, like, John Byrne was another person who I really loved his artwork. John Byrne, oh, Fantastic Four, X-Men. Just the fact that he would put those little nuances. I even told Matthew, I said, I would love to put recaps. Recap scene, like one page with just a recap. Be like, previously, and I'm that's how corny I am. That's why I'm the one who does, I do the special effects, the sounds. I draw those. Just because I was like, you know, we have a letterer, but I was like, that's part of the art.
But I was going to ask about that, because there's one bit where I think it's an issue 2 or 3, where I think B-Wen gets hit down, and then you've kind of got this noise that almost spirals with him. One of the kaijus. And you see that the spiral of him as he goes through panels. And I'm seeing that, and I was like, that looks amazing, but I don't know if that's Frankie or if that's the letterer.
That's me.
But it's amazing. Yeah. It really fits, and it pops as well. It really fits.
Yeah. One of the key things I said of comic books back then, they were bold colors. Mm-hmm. So I make sure, and I'm going back to when I worked in animation, flat colors, flat, bold, strong colors, a little bit of blending here and there, but not too much. You're focusing really on, because I know I'm using a lot of heavy blacks. So a lot of heavy blacks are in there. I don't need any kind of like old hyper muted colors or anything. None of that. Just straight, strong colors, bold. I want it to be vibrant. I want to be like when I was a kid going into an LCS or any comic book store, which I used to do, a lot of them, the colors just, your mind was overloaded with all these beautiful, vibrant colors. I got to pick that book up. I got to get it.
It's a feast for your eyes.
Exactly. That's what I think that's been somewhat missing from a lot of different books out there, because we've gone through this whole phase of just like, well, you got to make the book all hyper such and such, and we want realistic and stuff, and not knocking it, but I grew up, there was a lot of variations. There was like, you had people that painted books, and then you had what they call the outlaw books. And, you know, outlaw, you had underground comics. You had all these different unique styles so regardless of what, you were just inundated with just this wealth of just writing styles, writing techniques, lettering. I mean, I'm a big fan of like that ugly form of hand lettering. You ever see that? You ever
get the books like love that. I've been reading some old school comics, and you see, and you're like, well, there's a word, there's a letter there, and you're like, that A is not the same as that.
Exactly. It's showing you the human. It's, I don't think people understand how important it is as a human element. You know, like I love original artwork. Mm. Even though I collect figures and stuff like that as well, but I value my original artwork because it comes from a human.
Yep.
I want to see. I want to feel. I want to be like, when I pick that page up and look at it, the little mistakes.
The beauty of imperfections.
Thank you. That's it. That, you just nailed it. That's what I want. All this stuff that people see with Kanye Kama, that's imperfections. It's my imperfections. It's Matthew's imperfections. We are not trying to come out saying that we're trying to give you the ultimate book on beautiful paper, sculpted paper and all this stuff. We just want to give you a comic book. When I got a comic book, I could roll that comic book up and put it in my back pocket, and it was it. And I go on my merry way, and I would read it if it was at school, at lunchtime. I would love to bring that kind of magic back if we could, or be part of that. Like, if there's others, I can't do it by myself, of course. But if other people could just be like, yeah, let's just do comic books, just to do comic books. As long as it's readable, maybe we can get the prices down. Maybe we can work. Those are the things that I think could help us. If we could have this almost second coming,
you know. The thing is what I love as well is not only your passion, but one of the things I was just looking at here is I didn't want to spoil anything from any of the later issues, because I'm going to say to people, go to the Kickstarter, support it, and then you can get access to some of these other things. But one little thing I'll say is Beauty and Imperfections, completely agree, but I love your references to 80s stuff and the things that give these comics a lot of personality, a lot of flavor. Now, one is definitely the setting and the colors popping and other things. Yes. But one of my favorite things, and you did it and I adore it, as I'm going to show it on screen, is fake adverts. I'm such a sucker. I absolutely love it. So you've got this one here.
Oh,
there you go. And it's just like, because of the world that it was in, you know, the whole story of it, which gets explained in the issues, but it's, you know, essentially robots take over, but it's a toy company that's actually the cause of the AI, and then, you know, people have to go off and find another planet. Very, very, very briefly, but read the comics.
I'm gonna admit that I think that me and Matthew have definitely. I like the fact that people think that it is what they think it's going to be, because that's important. Because I think we're definitely playing around with a bunch of different stuff where we it's not going to be what you think it is. That's all I can say.
But that's what I love. But the teases that I like. I like it's the flavor text. Like that advert probably took you a bit of time to actually put together. You could be, I could have spent more time on another comic panel or this or that. Yep. But you took the time, and I think there's one in each issue. And I love seeing them because I'm like, this makes me feel like I'm in the world of Kaijus and Cowboys. And that's what I love. And it's just these little details of that you are putting in, which is obviously it's you and Matthew as well. But like with your artwork, you've got a lot of details in there without being hyper detail orientated. Yes. You've got a lot of bold colors and everything feels like very big. But it's a world that it's not Earth. That's the thing.
Yes.
It's a different world.
Yes.
So in that idea and all the crazy creatures in it, it's like, why wouldn't there be really vibrant colors? You know, you've got a giant, crazy, massive kaiju thing. And I love all of the different elements. So although it is the beauty and imperfections, it's also so well thought out, which I really appreciate.
Thank you. Thank you. One of the big things about it was I told Matthew, because originally when Matthew writes, we think so differently. And that's good. That's another thing I love, because sometimes it's like if I was to do a book, which I have and down the line I may, I feel like I'm more like in a sense of Jack Kirby. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I'm more in the sense that I'm an artist. And when I tend to create my own stuff, I'm drawing it and then I add dialogue to it. And a lot of my stuff could be kind of out there. I'd be like, saying grandiose things. So I kind of like the fact that Matthew's coming from another standpoint, where he's bringing that extra little thing that I might not have thought. There's stuff in there I go, wow, I never thought of that. But one of the things about it was I told Matthew, I said, Matthew, one of the key things I said, because I remember he gave me a first script for it, and he was like, B-1 was holding a gun. And I said, that's not going to happen. And he said, what's the problem? I said, the problem is that in my mind, I can't wrap around the idea of a robot having a gun in his hand, like a human. I said, yes. And I said, let me explain. And I that's what I do. I'm not one of those people where I just go, well, that's not going to happen, you know, and then don't explain myself. I like to, you know, because that's a professional. I've been in meetings and people have, you know, when you're shooting ideas, you know, and whatever, you should be explaining why you come to this point so they can get a better idea. And I said, I said, I love Terminator and I love various things, but B-Win represents a lot of the tropes from Super Robots. Super Robots was a genre, Go Nage, who did Mazinga Z. A lot of those special kind of robots had weaponry that was incorporated in their bodies. And I said, the thing about it is that I think that it's important that this character has things that, you know, sort of come out of his body. And then they sort of like, you know, when I said, when I think of Iron Man, I love Iron Man. I love the fact that you don't know where the weapons are at. He could be lying on his back and all of a sudden a missile comes out of his hip. You know, I mean, you know, but it makes sense to me, you know, whereas if you just had a robot with a gun in his hand, then okay, well, break his hand. You know, now you don't have a gun. Now I knock the gun, or the gun falls out of his hand and stuff like that.
There's more things to find. Is that drip feeding? That's in your character as well.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I just think that for myself, I said, I'm paying homage to stuff that I grew up with that I really loved. And I said that B-Win represents that trope. He has the ridiculously massive hat rim stuff. Those, just like you said, the Vampire Hunter D, which probably was in the back of my mind because I saw that movie. I love Vampire Hunter D. It probably was in the back of my head. I knew that when I was doing his design, I wanted him, I could see the image of him if it was animated, just like an 80s, you know, kind of like anime kind of thing. It would just be like the wind blowing and he's just like his dust is kind of flowing in the thing, and then he has a steed, a giant. First it would be him walking, and then you see the giant, his massive steed, Kaiju behind him, sort of coming up behind him. I could see that as clear as day, how it would be. You know, but I wanted to get, and plus his dreadlocks, plus his hair.
The dreadlocks made from wires is my, apart from the giant hat, because I'm a sucker for giant hats, the dreadlocks are just so cool as well. And also, not only are they cool, but they assist with showing motion. They assist with showing other things. So not only are they something that is just objectively cool, you know, what's cooler than a robot with dreadlocks and a giant hat, but also it assists with certain paneling where you can see what's going on. You don't have to write, you know, I mean, as you know, because of a lot of the Bronze Age comics and even before that, a lot of it is, here's a block or the thought bubbles of exposition. Old Spider-Man did it, old Moon Knight did it, and things like that. Pointing to myself because I'm wearing a Moon Knight top. Like, no worries. A lot of these stuff, I'm like, great story, but I don't need to hear, I'm going to throw a grappling hook at that car that's moving. With a lot of your visual storytelling, when you've got a character like this who've got so many different things, you know, he doesn't have to say, I'm going to get my gun out. It's like his arm just opens up and there's something crazy in there that fires up. It adds itself to the medium of not giving too much away to begin with, which is one of the things you mentioned, almost drip feeding that information, allows you to explore the character for the ride. When you meet someone, unless they're basically your child, when you meet someone, you don't know their whole backstory. You only find out what happened to them as you talk to them, as you get to know them. Exactly. They may say a random offhand comment. Exactly. Yes. And that's what I love about this.
Well, also the thing about cowboys, it's kind of funny because as you read the other ones, and not trying to give a lot away, but there's other players in here. And they don't, you know, it's not cowboys. so again, that's that whole thing that hits back to, because I sat there, because when we first come up with the name, we both said the name, Kaijus and Cowboys, over and over again. We went back and forth just to make sure that it flowed, because coming from advertising, I understand what branding, like the sense of what branding is. And when you get a name, something that just you want to make sure that, and I'll tell anybody out there that's watching this, if you are going to start your own comic book or whatever, make sure that the name that you have is something that people can get. And that's a tough thing to really be able to just be like, boom, it just hits them. You know, that name should be able to Godzilla. You know, King Kong or Kong. It's like it just hits your brain so quick that it's just like, boom, they immediately get some kind of image in their head, you know. And so think about it. Instead of, because I've seen some people create some names out there and it's like, I can't pronounce the names. So then I go, whoa, that's pretty okay. All right. And then I'm like, how do you even market that?
Yeah. People remember, how do you search it on the internet? Like, how do you?
It truly is a process of thought. You have to take a moment, breathe, and then strategize. I'll tell you a quick, a short story.
Do it.
I used to play racquetball a lot. I had a buddy. I loved playing racquetball. And I remember we would go in there and we'd play. We weren't great players, but we were good. We would go in and go and play and, you know, get some good games between ourselves. So one time we decided to bring some older gentlemen in, the old schoolers. And we're all cocky and stuff and thinking we're all bad and everything. And so we're running around, man. And these old schoolers, man, they schooled us. those older gentlemen hit those balls, man. They knew where to hit those balls. And we were chasing. I remember being drenched in sweat, breathing hard, everything. And those guys just sitting there smiling. Is how you kids doing? We're like, yeah, we're fine, whatever. But that lesson stayed with me where I said they understood where they hit the balls. They understood that there's a way which you could do this where you don't have to be chasing the balls all the time and diverting and getting rid of all your energy. Conserve your energy. And I've used that in the same sense of what I'm doing work-wise, where how can I be more efficient? Think about the stuff that's important and then try to eliminate stuff that isn't. Like, again, I see a lot of people who are doing a lot of merchandise. We got some merch as well and stuff like that. But remember, and I had this talk with Matthew, I said, we have to remember that we're creating a comic book. That's the key thing, because, you know, I love when people are, you know, people are happy and enthusiastic and they go, oh, yeah, you should be making, like last year, I'll show you this. We did this figure. We did this guy.
Oh, amazing stuff.
We did this. We tried it out. We found somebody, amazing 3D sculptor named Dope Pope. That's what his name he goes by. And we had this figure on, we called it Figure on Demand on our August campaign last year. One person went for that, went for this figure.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lesson. I walked away and I told him, we had, afterwards I said, you know, I thanked the person, you know, and they actually posted about it. And I said, thank you. But I had a talk with those guys. And I said, look, I said, first off, we did a great job because we got this made. But what do we learn from this? And what we learned is that it's hard to do toys. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do figures. The thing about it is that it takes a lot. It takes a lot. It takes a lot of marketing. It takes a lot to be able to understand your audience who are going to be interested in doing that. And the thing is that we're just two comic book creators. And that's okay. My major thing I said with them, I said, look, I'm glad we did it as a test. But I said, the thing is that our key thing is that we're focusing on making a comic book. We're focusing on making an IP. Now, if the IP is very popular, people like it and whatever, ideally, we would love to have somebody come along and say, we'd like to license it to make some figures, which is even better because then we don't have to even deal with that stuff and then be like, all right, cool. All right, whatever. But that's whatever. You know, the main focus is that we're trying to do a comic book. And I would tell people that, like, try to stay focused on what the main agenda is. Don't let yourself get sidestepped into, I want to make cards, playing cards. I want to make, a bunch of action figures. I want to make, especially when you're thinking money-wise and stuff like that. Like, even if you did a campaign and can you afford this?
Hmm.
Will you be able to cover this? I see a lot of people get themselves in trouble because of this, because all of a sudden they find out that, yeah, what about taxes? What about the shipping costs for those figures? You know, all these wonderful things. These are all the different things. And then minus that, now you got books. See, the thing is, the whole point is that you're not supposed to get yourself pushed up against a wall. Yes, you can be enthusiastic. Yes, there's going to be enthusiastic people, fans who are going to suggest certain things. Suggestions are great. That's why you take note of them and you put them aside. And you can look at them and say, okay, that's a great idea. I like that. I think about it. Sure, you could. That's what it's all about. That's that great synergy that we have. But it doesn't mean you need to be doing everything, especially at a point when you're just starting out. You know, if you're just starting out, focus on your book. See if you can build your audience. See if you can find people who are going to really be into what you're doing. And then see where it leads. That in itself is a job.
No, I agree completely. You know, I want to ask you a couple more things, though, because, I mean, you're very insightful and your passion is infectious. I absolutely adore it. So I want to ask, like, with your styles, you know, because you've basically tackled almost every kind of drawing, you know, you've done physical and digital and all the different variations. And I can see in the Kaijus and Cowboys comics, you know, there's certain styles which are more prominent in certain panels than others. Is there a medium that you prefer? Because obviously you've done black and white comics as well. You've done trading cards, you've done painting, you've done digital, you've done physical. Is there, you know, obviously at the moment, your favorite thing is definitely comics because we're promoting Kaijus and Cowboys.
Yes.
But just in general, if you could like magic a project once Kaijus and Cowboys is finished, it's full 12 issue run and things, and you've got a bit of air quotes breathing room because I know you've got a lot of other stuff going on. Sure. If you could have like the ultimate project, if money wasn't an option, wasn't a problem and time wasn't, and you could just go bam, is it? Do you have a favorite? Because I know you quite like commissions as well in a lot of ways. I'm just interested in your own preference, if there is one, of, but whether it's digital or physical and the kind of the format in which it's in, just as you as an individual.
Ooh. That's a tricky one.
You can choose more than one. It's just more loosely your favorites, in
I
spent.
I would say the one that would probably get me really excited would probably do in sketch cards.
Hmm.
I've always loved, because I'm actually working on some Ultraman cards behind me. Yeah, I'm working on an Ultraman 4 set that's coming out through RO Park. So I like them. As somebody who collects original artwork, I love the idea that people out there have my original artwork in their hands. So sketch cards are a form of it, in which it's much more smaller and stuff like that. So that one makes me very happy. So I would say, the kind of money, be able to do like some kind of crazy sketch card kind of thing. Now, on the other side of it, it'd be probably more like my own, like, I've worked with a lot of people, you know, I've worked with, you know, like, I'm working with Matthew on Kaijus and Cowboys, and then before I did Robot Gods Akamatsu with James Biggie, but it'd be nice for me, Frankie B, to just try his hand at trying to do a comic book himself. Like, I don't think people have seen, like, I remember years ago, my first comic book was called Peace. That was me. That was all me. My writing, everything. And that was years ago, though. That was, like, literally when I was in art school. And I think 1991. Yeah, 1991, when I graduated, I put out my own book. And then I tried over the years. So I would love to probably do my own comic book and be able to put that out so people can see how my writing style is connected to my artwork.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where I think that a lot of people, because I've spoken to a couple of other comic book artists, and I think, and also writers who are very appreciative of comic book artists. Sure. I think one thing that's the big thing that people really don't realize, I know it's the discussion of how the sausage is made, but the really big thing is, obviously it's a collaborative effort, but the sheer amount of input that the artist has, even if you just strip it down to like character models, like obviously you creating, a bot with no name, it's like you did that in tandem with Matthew, but at the end of the day, you're the one getting it on page. And like even little things like his dreadlocks, you know, and his hat and different things like that. Mm-hmm. All of these feed into what the character either is, will be, or potentially even was. And I think that a lot of the, I feel like it's almost in ways, it would be easier for some artists, some illustrators to create a story as opposed to story makers to create a visual medium in a certain way, because I feel like it's almost easier to go back from art to story as opposed to the other way around, if you see where I'm coming from.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I mean, I don't know if you ever read a manga called Gon, G-O-N.
No, I haven't. I'll write it down for the show notes, but
it's G-O-N, and it's about a large head dinosaur. And Gon is amazing because the book has no words.
Mm.
The manga artist, he did everything. And I only have a few copies. So it's like, it's a massive volume. I don't have all the books. But I remember seeing them years ago and I was like so intrigued by that idea of just trying to do something just all visual with no words. And so, you know, I'm always trying to experiment. I'm always trying to test myself to see, you know, what else I can do. You know, there's never a point where I want to be complacent, because I say complacency is what really, it's like the end. Really, when you don't have any more challenges and you're just kind of like going through the motion, then that means, I don't know, I think I'll probably put my pencils down, my pencil and pen down, then that means I'm just done. And I'm not there yet. You know, I'm at a place where I'm always trying to challenge myself. I'm always trying to say, how far can I take it? You know, when I'm doing artwork, I'm like, what would I want? I tend to always try to put myself in the place of the other person, the viewer, and go, what would they want to get? If I'm looking at this and whatever, what kind of experience do I want to get from that? And again, I attribute that to advertising as well. Advertising, I remember dozens of meetings that I would sit in, and they would always talk about the experience, whatever the product was. I mean, I'm talking like big. I did a lot of work with some big time corporate, I mean, big time money. A
lot of NDAs.
Yeah, big time. And it was like, but you sit there and you listen to these copywriters and these creative directors and art directors, and they're just saying all this stuff about connection with the people and how you're trying to, this experience they're trying to tell in an ad. You know, and I don't think a lot of people understand like this stuff. Like when I look at ads now, I can't help but dissect them. Because I've worked in it so long, it's like I sit there and I go, I see what you did right there. Oh, well done. Yeah, I literally am like that. And my wife, I've got her, she's kind of doing the same thing when she goes, oh, okay, I see what they did. So it's kind of like your mind gets in that point where you just go, yeah, this is about the experience. I want people to fall into whatever art piece I'm doing. I want them to have a moment and just pull them into it. And then whatever. I'm definitely that old school artist where I'd prefer my artwork to be way ahead of me. Instead of me ahead of my artwork, you know. And I think some artists where, you know, they kind of are placing themselves before their artwork.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you should be putting yourself, your artwork ahead of yourself.
That's a very interesting way of putting it. And I want to also mention I know in a prior podcast, you mentioned that you like Star Wars, you love Star Trek, you like Star Wars. As you could probably see behind me, I'm a massive Star Wars fan, but you recently watched the Clone Wars and stuff, and that kind of interaction with R2, change of perception.
Oh, Bad Batch.
Stuff. Loving that. Up to date with that. So I'm so into, you know, all that stuff. I mean, I've got, you know, I've got Ahsoka here and around Obi-Wan from Clone Wars. So I'm really into that jazz. I wanted to mention with it, Now my mind's just going off into thousands of Star Wars tangents, but there was a point. It was so there's a thing called Star Wars Visions, which is on Disney Plus.
I saw that. Yep.
Yeah, they're really cool. Different animation studios. For anyone who isn't aware, who the first season was all Japanese, and then the second season they've widened a bit. Now some of the Visions shorts now have comics out for it. So there's the Jewel, which is the first one, and it's Takashi Okasaki, I think, or something along those lines. I'll put in the description. He made a few for the ones that were The Jewel, which is the black and white one with red 3D
That was fantastic.
Incredible. And he's made two comics of that now.
Ooh, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, you should check them out. They're really, really cool. Yeah.
All right.
And there's also someone called Peach Momoko, and she's done work for Marvel and stuff as well.
Yeah.
She's released one, which is a Visions one, which is purely visual. There's no dialogue in the whole thing. And I remember reading it and looking through it, and I'm like, every page could be a poster. Every single one. If you printed this out as just an art print and just put it on the wall, you didn't mention to anyone what it was, you would have whole conversations of it. And the reason I wanted to mention that is because I think that with your artwork, it's, you know, it's very, it pops out a lot. I'm just looking at some of the images now and things. And I remember just so many of these panels. I mean, obviously cover artwork is incredible, you know, but like so many of these panels really stand out as like things that work in the visual medium that could really genuinely be posters. And I want to tell you that I really, really love that. And I love the style of it all. And I love the, I really do get the 80s homage with that, without, you've got it in a great way, because you can kind of, you can use things that aren't from the 80s homage while also you can, and you've kind of got a lot of tools in your tool belt. And I just think this whole production really is a perfect marriage of things people like from manga / anime, things people like from comics, even the big two, you know, things that people like from the Golden Age or the Bronze Age, but also some modern stuff. And I just think that yourself, and you know, hats off to Matthew as well, but from what I see, I'm a very visual person as well.
Sure.
I just think the visuals of these comics that you've been putting together, it's just such an amalgamation of so many cool things. And I love cool.
Well, I'm gonna tell you right now, Mike, one of the great things about it is I'm all about the journey. And I'll stress that. One of the things about it is that I can look at, this was the very first book that we did. This was back in 2020. And this was the very, this was the zero issue.
Yes.
I can look at the artwork at the zero issue. I've just wrapped up issue 7.
Nice.
And the artwork looks a lot different. You can see progression. And that's one of the things I try to tell a lot of artists that are starting out, because there's this weird sense of perfection that everyone's trying to attain. I see these artists and they're struggling because they're like, I'm trying to make the perfect comic. And my thing is that it's not about the perfect comic. It's about the journey. The thing is that some of the most famous artists right now, like Mike Mignola, is a fine example. Mike Mignola's artwork that he draws, that draws today, looks nothing like what he did before. You can look at his old books. They look nothing like that. Frank Miller's work does not look, if you look at old Frank Miller stuff, it looks nothing like The Dark Knight. You know? So the thing is that it is about the journey. Don't beat yourself up about trying to be perfect. You know, I look at my books, and I'm always, and these are really my scrapbook. They're my reference books. So I look at them so I make sure I'm not cloning of doing stuff the same thing over. But I can look at it and I can grimace. You know, I have my moments I go, oh. but I'm at that place where I go, I can do better. And that, so I'm not like, oh, I hate it, whatever, because that's how I was in my 20s. Oh my God, this is horrible. I don't want anybody to see. No. I'm gonna be turning 54 this year. So the thing is, I look at it now and I go, oh, okay, I saw what I did there. I can do something better. And the next thing, and as each book progresses, you're going to see subtle changes of how the style is. I want people to see that. I want you to see my growth, because that's my story. Your story shouldn't just be a one-off. It should be a continuation. You know, you could probably look at Jack Kirby stuff if the original stuff, and then see the progression of his work, his style change. John Byrne, John Byrne's early stuff, and you saw where he was going, where he was like, you know, it's like, whoa, dude, he started putting zipper tone, screen tone. This is what these are the things that build up a true artist. It's the scope of what their body of their work is. And then you see where they end up leading. So
I love that. And I will say, I mean, also, issue 0 is quite close to, it's got very minimal dialogue, which I really, really like as well. You know, I really do like that. But I'll say,
which is funny because me, I when I first started with James, I was almost losing my mind about that because I felt that there should have been more dialogue. But we stuck with it. It was one of those things. And that's the whole thing about when you build a relationship, when you're collaborating, it's about communication. Me and James have had, and I, you know, we work together. We're wonderful. So this isn't bad stuff. But it was like we had communications and we talked and stuff. And that's the key thing I tell anybody in collaborating. You have to learn how to be able to give a little and take a little.
Yeah. 100%.
And sometimes when you think that you could be right, you could be wrong. And that's okay. I was like, I mean, we first put this first one out. I was like, how long is this going to work? We need to have more words in this and whatever. And he's like, don't worry. Just put it out, Frank. And I was just like, all right, dude. And I chilled out. See? But that's the thing. And people, they dug it. And I was like, okay. It taught me a lesson. And I say that each time something teaches, I'm open for learning because I want to be a better me. I want to be better tomorrow than I was today. And just keep going and going and going.
Yeah, and it's an amazing thing. And I can even see just comparatively of going back to issue one compared to the later issues as well. Yep. You can see some minor tweaks and things. But I want to tell you, like when I read issue zero, when we communicated things,
yep.
And I was like, cool, I'll see what this is all about and things. I already knew I liked your artwork because I checked out on Instagram and things. But there's one panel which I've got up here and it's from issue zero, so it's not a spoiler. This is my favorite. And I just love the visuals of it. It's this one here.
Oh, really?
I absolutely, that bottom one with the ones and zeros in the background and just, it's simple, but it's just so, there's just a lot it could be said. And that's one of those ones which I feel like if you remove the story, you move the top two panels and you just have just that one thing, this could be like a really cool, you know, like art piece. In any, you could tell whole stories about that. And that just for me in the zero issue, that panel, I was like, I love it. Just straight away, I had it.
Now, I apologize if I'm off, but are you British?
I am, yes.
You are British. Okay, good. I didn't want to screw up.
That was kind of.
I remember looking at 2000 AD.
Oh, yep. And I have a whole duffel bag of them downstairs.
Yeah, some people, I remember early on, people were like, wow, dude, your artwork's almost like that. I love Alan Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love Captain. I love all that stuff. The early Judge Dredd stuff. That stuff was so, it's such a... such an energy to it, man. I just, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's going through my head as I'm doing stuff. The way characters look, the almost iconic kind of, you know, whatever, the strength of that. That's the kind of stuff that I want to try to capture, you know, when I'm doing my work and stuff and then test myself. There may be times when, because I remember a lot of that old AD 2000 stuff where you would see some mixed media, pencil or the dry brushing. You know, just anything to give it that nice texture. Oh, wonderful.
It's amazing. It's amazing when you see, especially I think a lot of indie comics, what they can make. Because I read quite a bit of Marvel stuff, you know, and I've read quite a bit of DC, you know, I think everyone has. But like, I find the same with filmmaking is that when you're independent and you don't have an unlimited resource of money or time is the big one. When you don't have an artist who can just, if you don't catch up by the deadline, some other one can come in. It's like with indie stuff, you don't have that. It's like you have to do it. And I find that a lot of things in filmmaking and in comics and stuff, a lot of innovations and a lot of things that people gravitate towards in certain comics came from a place where it's like, we need to figure out, as you've discussed on this, you've got your own personal shortcuts. You're like, we need to figure out how this can work. How do we make this and this put together without any resources? And I think that your experience in the various industries and stuff has really lent itself that you've picked up a lot of the right lessons. As you've mentioned in this podcast, like so many things are just so cool and done in maybe a slightly different way, but they're so effective. And even you doing the sound effects as well. Because I did wonder when I read it and I saw, you know, artist / SFX. And I'm Frankie. And I was like, it probably has been done before, but I was like, SFX, but done by Frank. I was like, really? Well, I was going to ask about it. And then obviously you answered the question that I didn't ask about saying, you do them yourself. And I was like, that's another little cool thing that, again, you get an indie.
It is part. That's the whole thing. Again, I used to love when I would go to cons and stuff. What I would see the because I have a few of them from the late 80s into the 90s. What's the name of those books? It's escaping me. You know, comic books. They're like comic books, but the zines.
Oh, like is it trade paperback kind of things or like what?
No, they're like the cheaper form. Like say if somebody went to Kinkles or Copy Cop or something, they made these little comic books, I think we used to call them zines, but they have another name too. But I have a few of those from like the past, and I would love that. I would go on somebody, so 75 cents. Here you go, 75 cents. Here's my book, and I just love, like, you open them up, and it would just be this, just amazing raw artwork. It was just their truth, you know, not gussied up, not try whatever. No gloss. Exactly. It's just them doing hand balloons. You know, the balloons look a little funky.
Yeah, the wiggly edges.
You can't really read everything. The words are kind of mashing in together, but you try to read it. You're like, oh, this is cool, dude. Those are the kind of things that I would always get excited about, because I just felt it was very human. I was seeing who the artist was. This is this artist. They're passionate about this. They're trying to tell a story. That's exciting to me. You know, it's not polished. And that kind of stuff I kind of like. Now, I also feel that, yes, we're in a time and age where technology has gotten better, where we can all now, you know, we could do a little bit better with some of the artwork. But I don't think it has to be to the point where people are like, well, this has to be like, you know, extremely like, oh my God, the paper quality has to be such and such. Or the color. Yeah, that always gets me when I hear people talking about that. And I'm like, oh, you know, I just want people to read it. You know, I ideally, I would love kids. I tell Matthew that all the time. I want to make sure, I would love to get the next generation hooked into comic books, like I was hooked into comic books. 100%. You know, video games exist, cool. Okay, fine. But can we get them hooked to comic books?
Well, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was going to say,
I've recently, I'm engaged. I'm getting married this year.
Congratulations. Thank you.
And so we're talking, you know, we've got a house we bought a couple of years back. We've got a dog now, and we're speaking about kids and things, you know, will be after we get married and stuff, we'll start trying and et cetera. But one of the things that we've kind of agreed, myself and my fiance, we've said, like, one thing we'll do is what my parents did to me, which was they say, right, bedtime is at 8 o'clock. But if you want to read, be it a comic book or an actual book, you can stay up for an extra half hour, an extra 40 minutes or so. My dad would be like, you can stay up for an extra 45 minutes, then I'm coming up and turn the light off. And then it wouldn't be till about an hour he'd come turn the light off. But it was that thing where I was always like, you know, because kids, you know, are often so desperate to stay up for any means necessary. Yes, they'll do anything to stay up. And I'm like, well, you can read. And my parents used to do that to me. And now I've got this love of reading and the comic books and things. And I think a lot of people, and I was guilty of this as well in college, like getting into video games, getting into women and other stuff, you know, and it's like distractions. And so for a few years, I didn't read that much comics or books otherwise. Yep. And then when I kind of got into my 20s and stuff, I kind of delved into a bit more. And I'm like, man, whenever I have a break from reading, for whatever reason, I come back to it, I'm like, comic books or books. Yeah. I'm like, it's so good. It's just us. Yeah. It does something that other mediums just don't do. It makes you work enough because you have to process and read stuff without being just glued to a TV. And you got to turn the page, or, you know, if you're reading digitally, slide the thing. But there's just enough interaction, that kind of in between almost a video game and a movie. And I love it. I think it's such a great medium.
Comic books, I read novels. Same thing. I got into reading novels and stuff from comic books. I remember a history teacher, because I was struggling with history, and he sat me down and he said, Frank, he's like, you like comics. He started off like that. And I said, yeah. And he said, okay. He said, you know, those stories like Hercules and Argonauts and stuff. He said, they battle monsters and stuff. And I was like, really? And he said, yeah. He said, yeah, they did all this stuff. You should check it out. I mean, I'm just, you know, the Odyssey, here it goes. And I remember getting hooked. Because it was like these vast adventures and stuff. And it was like, wow, they're like superheroes.
Yeah.
And whatever. But again, he used a technique where he said, you read something, look at this. It was amazing. I agree.
100%.
Comic books help you. Comic books help you. They can get you to the next level to reading books. And if you want.
We'll start to wrap up here, but I will say my fiance as well, she's a teacher as well. Okay. She teaches secondary school kids, which is kids who are about 11 years old to 16. So one of the worst ages. And she teaches language as well. She speaks multiple languages, so she teaches a lot of that. And she tries to get kids into reading more, because at the moment in the UK and I think in the US as well, there's actually a literacy problem, because so few kids are reading. Because even when we grew up, you know, it was, you know, there was stuff on TV, which is cool. You know, physical media and stuff, which was cool. cool, but realistically, it wasn't like you just go on any electric device.
Do you remember that a lot of the programs that we watched, they would have messages afterwards.
Yep.
Remember that? Like He-Man, they would have messages, things in there where they were trying. They were just like, hey, trying to get kids, whatever. And they don't have that anymore.
No.
They don't have any cartoons where after the thing, they're like, SpongeBob comes out and he's like, okay, kids, remember, you should get a book and read it. And
Yeah.
None of that stuff. No, none of that. It's sad. It really is, because it's not that kind of stuff could help promote the fact of what they can, you know, do some other stuff. But you don't see it. I remember G.I. Joe, watching G.I. Joe. You know, you shouldn't be a bully. Don't be a bully because such and such. And it would be these great messages for us, you know, but they don't do it. They just stop doing it.
But that's it. That's it. And like my fiance's called Megan. And so she's like, she's trying really hard to get some of her kids into reading and stuff like more. And one of them was like, I'll only read if there's like something about Fortnite or Minecraft. And we go into charity shops, which I think are called thrift stores over there, just where people donate stuff to things and you buy it really cheap. And we look around there occasionally for old books or cool stuff like that. And she found I think it's a Fortnite or a Minecraft comic sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, oh, this random kid said, I would never read this. It's these two things, almost flippantly saying, because there's clearly no thing. And she found, and she got, and just, it was like, it cost her like a pound, you know, so she got it and gave it to him. And he was like really into it. And that's kind of
nice.
Making, it's little things. It takes one good comic or one good book or something just to spark it. And I think with, you know, Kaijus and Cowboys, I genuinely think so many kids could, you know, read this and they would be like, oh, this is so cool. I want to read more, either manga, or I want to read more, you know, old school stuff, or I want to see more about this. And there's so much on, even stuff that you've worked on, you know, there's so much more out there that people can really sink their teeth into. So I want to give the mic back to you as your sort of final thoughts and things. Any last comments? And I'll add links in the description. So final comments, final plugs, anything like that. The floor is yours, good sir.
Well, we do have a campaign. April 15th will be our issue 4 Kaijus and Cowboys campaign. We will be back. You'll be able, if you haven't got any of the issues, we'll have catch-up tiers, which are great. So, you know, we'll also be offering, let's see, we got some trading cards. This is the newest one.
Oof, I love that.
That was done by Dope Pope. Fantastic card. This will be part of it. We're going to have some metal cards.
Oh, I'm a sucker for any metal cards.
Here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. This reward tier is from the mystery pack.
Ooh.
We decided to do a tricky one where it's like, look, if you're daring, if you're a true gambler, there is some stuff in here. There are items, 5 items in here of stuff that I've worked on over the years. So you may get a sketch card. You may get a steel card, a metal card. You may get some patches that never made it to market. You may be getting a bunch of different things that are very, very rare.
Mm.
But, you know, are you willing? Are you willing to roll the dice on it? So that's going to be one of our tiers. And, you know, we're just still working with this. You know, I also have a Redbubble shop if you want to get some neat stuff. The Redbubble shop is allowing me to stretch my creativity.
Well, I will quickly say, definitely go check that, because that's the only thing I didn't really mention, because obviously we're running out of time. But I will say there's 3 designs on there. Robo Shogun, I adore. Robot, I absolutely love that. And then there's also Robo Jammin, love that as well. And Cheesy Kitty, because Cheesy Kitty made me think of like Cheshire Cat of Tattoos. I looked at the Redbubble shop and there's some cool stuff on there.
I'm working with my wife and stuff, and she does these photographs. She does these amazing photographs, and I've just been sort of playing around with them and stuff. And it's the collaboration has been wonderful. But it's funny because I've had a Redbubble shop for years, and I just was like, it's just been sitting there. So this year was the year I started really kicking into gear. I said, you know, I'm gonna start putting some stuff on there. And then I also have an eBay store I have an eBay store as well. And that one, you know, it's I've been so busy of late, but I usually do my commissions and stuff, or I put original artwork on there and stuff like that. So if people are interested, they can always go on there and see if they can grab something, sketch cards or whatever on there as well. So I'm just, you know, again, I'm having the best time. I'm drawing. I've been doing this now for 30 plus years. This is what I was made for. This is it. I mean, I remember getting a conversation with an artist buddy of mine. He said, Frank, what else are you going to do? You're an artist, dude. And seriously. And you start thinking like that. You go, yeah, I'm an artist. You know, so go out there and draw. I got to draw.
Absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. I'll put links to everything in the description. I'll say Fantastic. If anyone is even slightly unsure, go check out Frankie's Instagram, because that was the first thing I looked at and I was like, wow. Yeah, I was like, I got to talk to this guy. Just seeing some of the kaijus and the monsters and the detail, love it. So people need to go check that out. But, you know, Frankie, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. I will be supporting you guys on Kickstarter for issue 4. You'll see my name somewhere there, because I'm genuine. I think this project is really cool. Really, really love the first issue 0-3.
And I'd like to just add, thank you so much, folks. I said, for the folks, if you really want to help independent creators out there, please, please, if you can, take pictures of the products that you've gotten. Please do a post. A positive post helps us a lot. Because, again, we don't have some kind of review board where you can, you know, Better Business Bureau, where people can go, well, that person did a fantastic job and whatever. So we've been sort of very you know, grateful for people who have posted about the stuff, especially when we put out, because we try to get the items out after the campaign at a reasonable time. So you're not waiting 6 months to a year to get anything. We make sure that you get it quickly. And when people post it and stuff, it helps others to see that we are serious. We want to make sure that you get the product out, because you've taken the time to check us out and to do it. So we want to do right by you. So anyway,
it's amazing. And tag creators, they love tag creators. You know, they love to open up conversation. Frankie, you know, loves to hear that. And
I love engagement. I do. I will talk with you. I'll drag that ear. Give me that ear. Come on.
Oh my lord.
Listen.
Oh, Frankie, it's Jerry been such a delight. I want you to hold on to the call for a moment when I finish recording. Got something to ask you. But just thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Really.
And that's the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, my friends, if you're on YouTube, please hit that like button and also subscribe and check out the back catalogue, because I've spoken to loads of other amazing content creators, especially around comics. And obviously, go check out the Kickstarter, as I said in the intro, as Frankie has said numerous times in this conversation, Kaijus and Cowboys number 4. I've read the first 3 in issue 0. It's great fun, as you must have heard in this conversation. So please go support this. Support indie comics where you can. But if you can't do that, please support Frankie in one of the other ways you can. You can follow him on the various social media places, his YouTube channel, go to his Redbubble store, or purchase anything else he's been involved in, including Robot God Akumatsu, or the Secret Lives of Villains webtoon, which I've included a link to in the description as well. But what else have we got coming up? Well, next week is likely going to be another conversation with an indie comic creator. I can't speak too much about that until I've got the conversation recorded, but that should be tomorrow. Then I've also, later this month, got another conversation with a Star Wars author, so I'm very excited about that. But again, I'll talk about that once the conversation's recorded. I've also got a conversation already in the bag with Paige of Buddy Pet. Now, Buddy Pet is a primarily dog walking business, but also does a lot of other pet-related stuff. And Paige and my cousin Charlotte both run the business together. So really, really cool conversation there. Talk about dog behavior and stuff, because Paige has recently got qualified in dog behavior, nutrition, and loads of other really cool things as well. So please tune into that podcast, especially if you have a little furry friend, because it's really, really informative. I've also got a really interesting conversation with someone lined up very soon, but I'm not going to talk about that until I've got that recorded, but it's going to be unlike anything else I've kind of done. So I'm really, really excited to talk to this individual about that. And then also I've got another episode of Clone Wars Conversations recorded in the bag. That's season 3, part 1, episodes 1 to 11. And Megan joins myself, Math, and Dave for the entire conversation. So if you're doing the Clone Wars rewatch with us for the Star Wars animated show that kickstarted a lot of amazing stuff that we're seeing at the moment, please tune into that. And you can watch the YouTube video at youtube.com/genuinechitchat. But friends, follow me on social media at Genuine Chit Chat on YouTube, X, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Threads, all those various places. I post a lot of stuff across them all. There's occasional videos of Willow being silly, but a lot of the time I'm talking about comics or movies or posting snippets and things of conversations I've had on this very channel. And you can support the show by going to patreon.com/genuinechitchat, and you get early access to a bunch of episodes, but also, more importantly, you get access to the exclusive Patreon show, which is called Afterthoughts. I do that with my fiance Megan, and we release an episode every single week, and a lot of the weeks we actually release 2 episodes as well. We review movies and TV shows and live performances and musicals and all kinds of stuff, and even just talk about things in our lives. And we've recently launched a new show called M&M Monthly, which has already premiered on Patreon and is going to be releasing on Patreon 1 month before it releases on this very feed. And myself and Megan talk for for 30 to 40 minutes about a random topic, and we've got quite a few already lined up. I've actually got two recordings in the bag, so if you want to contribute to Patreon, get loads of bonus content and early access to stuff for only £1 a month, please consider going to patreon.com/genuinechitchat. But friends, that's going to be enough from me. Thank you so much for listening. As always, I've got some very cool stuff lined up, so please make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. You may not like every episode I release, but there's definitely going to be some episodes coming up that you enjoy, especially if you enjoyed this one. But friends, I'll speak to you very soon, likely next week with another indie comic creator.
You have just experienced host, creator, everything else of Genuine Chit Chat, and also the host and creator of Star Wars Comics and Canon, found on the Comics in Motion podcast, Mike Burton.